T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
When it's all said and done and the dust settles on the analysis, I'll tell you this. The game was fun, and I'm pushing all my chips to the middle of the table on Kyle Shanahan. I will go ahead and push every last chip in there. I am all the way in on him as a head coach. The focal point is on a decision he made when he was trying to win the game late against the Packers at Lambeau on Monday night. The focal point is not on his team getting blown out. The focal point is not on his backup quarterback looking like a clown in a rudimentary, old-school style offense. Last night, what you saw was a guy who coached a banged-up, below-average roster into a game. Kyle Shanahan coached them into that game. You know who doesn't coach his team into games? Hugh Jackson, Jim Tomsula, Chip Kelly, Dirk Cutter, Jason Garrett, Vance Joseph, Marvin Lewis. Those are guys who have proven time and time again they will coach their teams out of games. They will coach them out of winning situations. Shanahan last night is a 10-point underdog at Lambeau with virtually no talent to speak of, found a way to put his team in a position to win that game. So sure, we can nitpick some decisions on throwing versus running late in the game, but bottom line, you went into Aaron Rodgers' house and you had a shot to knock him off. And if you're in Green Bay right now, as much as you love Rodgers, how are you not trying to run Mike McCarthy out of town? That's the best Mike McCarthy had for this Niners team? They should have won that game going away last night. And yet, once again, Green Bay shows that without Aaron Rodgers, they're one of the worst and most poorly assembled rosters in the league. So all my chips, everything in front of me right now, I'll push them right to the center of the table. I'm good with Kyle Shanahan.
You're all in on Shanahan, and that's awesome to hear. And I felt really good about the decisions he made late in that game, even though it ultimately backfired. I felt like he was playing to win the game. He wasn't playing to try to force overtime and maybe eke one out in the fifth quarter. I thought when he went for it, 2nd and 3, he tried to pass to Garcon. It was incomplete. And then Beathard throws the interception. For me, that felt like a coach playing aggressively, trying to reward his team for doing exactly what you said, Joe, which is playing great. No one expected them to go on the road to Lambeau Field and play that competitively against Green Bay. The spread was near double digits or right about double digits, and you have so many injuries and you're a one-win outfit, et cetera, et cetera. We've already seen a number of teams in the NFL fold up their tents with a lot less adversity. So the fact that they showed real heart, they fought all game. That's partly why I felt okay with them going for it the way they did, passing the ball in the fourth quarter.
I just think that you look at Green Bay. Green Bay played against a team that won't quit on anyone. They played against a team that, you know, if you look at how they played every game this year, the San Francisco 49ers, they have been in them. They have been in every game. Kansas City, they were before your man get hurt, Jimmy G goes down, they're going in to make that a one-score game, one-score possession. So let's not just think this team is just, you know, I think that they fight hard. I totally agree. I'm in with Kyle Shanahan. I think that he gets these guys to play hard. And I think that, you know what? I think that Mike McCarthy has squandered a lot of Aaron Rodgers' years away, not necessarily because, not to think that it's no talent, because I think Davante Adams is a top 10 receiver in the National Football League. I think if you go out there, it'd be hard to find 10 receivers that you would take over Davante Adams. He's got some weapons. I think that, like you said, Joe, the coaching staff that he has, not moving, not putting Aaron Rodgers in position, not running, not doing a bunch of different stuff. He's very simplistic. Aaron Rodgers is that team. They have squandered a lot of time just wasted because I don't think that they give him a lot. He could get more talent, but I think that also it's the scheme, it's the offense, it's so many different things, I think, with Green Bay that doesn't let Aaron Rodgers reach his full potential.
Who are you feeling better with today? The Niners with Shanahan or the Raiders with Gruden? Remember, Gruden got a 10-year, $100 million deal that everyone was trumpeting right into the season. It seems funny to ask, but I got to ask it. Gruden was supposed to be this brilliant offensive mind who spent all these years working behind the scenes to figure out what everyone else was doing. Who would you rather have as your head coach?
Shanahan, and I don't know if it's that close, because you look at the effort level of these teams in week six, because both teams are done for the season. We can obviously say that with them with just one win apiece. You go all the way to London, and you basically lay down, and you come away with 3 points, and you've got your quarterback who's basically physically and emotionally broken. Meanwhile, you have a 49er team that has a roster that you wouldn't trade the Niners roster for the Raiders roster if you were the Raiders, because you got a better roster, I think. Yet you go into Lambeau and you show real heart, you show grit, you have a team that's still playing for each other, and it's a game that you rightly can say that you should have won. And you look at their season and a half now under Shanahan, and they've lost 6 games, I believe, by a total of 1 score or less. To Lowe's point, this is a team that doesn't quit. They continued competing again last night, and you know that they're going to be rewarded down the road. So I think Shanahan's the obvious answer.
If you put Shanahan right here in Oakland, and if he was coaching this team right now would be over 500. Without a doubt, they would have beat Miami. Without a doubt, they would have beat friggin' Denver.
Carr would look solid. Cooper would actually be getting the ball.
You can't tell me he wouldn't. Look what he's doing with it. You just alluded to it, Dibs. Look what he's doing with less talent. Look what he's doing here, and compare the running backs. You can compare everything that this team has in Oakland and the way that they're playing. Shanahan, without a doubt, to me, I'd rather have him.
The defenses are remarkably similar, unfortunately, with neither D really.
Porous.
Yes.
Would be one word to throw out there.
Maybe it's the P word.
Yeah.
You lost the turnover battle 3-0. You were 9-point road underdogs. You started a backup quarterback. You were outgained by 120 total yards, and you still ended up tied with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time on his home turf on Monday Night Football with 3 seconds left in the game. So I don't think your coach is your problem. I think you have problems, and I think your coach isn't perfect, but I think you are in a much more favorable situation than you think. Remember, last night was the ultimate positive outcome for Niners fans. Quietly, you do not want to win these games. If you are not going to go to the playoffs, which this team is not, you don't want to win these games. You got all the enjoyment of a great football game last night, and you lost late, right? So it stings a little,
right.
But you're still in contention for the highest possible draft pick. No one's advocating tanking, but remember, week 17, Jim Tom Sula. There was no reason to win that game whatsoever, and yet somehow the Niners fell butt-cheek backwards into a victory. And what they did was not only cost themselves draft position, but they helped out the Rams. And by helping out the Rams, they gave the Rams an opportunity to give up less to move all the way up to number one to draft Jared Goff. At the time when we came off that game, everyone said, you don't lose football games for a ball. You're nuts. This is just, it's stupid. How do you have a job? And yet now, does anyone have the ticket stuff from that game framed, hanging in their house? No. The game meant nothing. It helped the Rams and it hurt you. But this situation right here, last night you got all the enjoyment you could possibly get from a professional football game. You were right into that Lambeau. It was an exciting game. It was a fun game. So what? You lost. You still come away with a better draft pick as a result. Take the positives for it. You got a coach. You got a team that competes. It's going to get better. At some point, if these guys can get healthy, I would like to believe. I mean, because right now, what are you building? Are you building a team or a hospital wing?
Man.
That's what it looks like time and time again. All right. We got a lot to get to this hour. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with the Hall of Famer, Rick Barry. We've got Warriors tickets to give away. And we also have a conversation with Tim Hardaway coming up at 8 o'clock. It's your boys, Jolo and Dibs, right here on 95.7 The Game. Woody, thanks for the phone call. What's going on?
Okay. Well, then, watch my smoke, baby.
It's Tip-Off Tuesday on 95.7 The Game. We're getting you ready for Warriors opening night with Warrior great Tim Hardaway at 8 a.m. Inside the NBA host Ernie Johnson at 12:30. And Damon Bruce is live from Oracle, joined by Warriors insiders Mark Medina at 3:45 and Mark Spears at 5:10. Then Steiny and Guru host the all-new Warriors Live at 6. And the Champs tip off this season at 7:30, only on 95.7. The Game. Tip-off Tuesday continues on 95.7 The Game. Here's Joe Lowe and Dibs.
We'll be right back. Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our jacked-in listening audience, because we love you and because the Warriors start their quest for a three-peat tonight at Oracle against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, we will have a pair of tickets to that game to give away in about a half hour at 7:45. Hint, hint, brush up on your playoff trivia. In addition, Tim Hardaway will join us at 8 o'clock, Greg Papa at 8:30. But right now, we are very excited to go to the phones. Hall of Famer, NBA champion, 8-time All-Star, the incomparable Rick Barry joining us here on 95.7 The Game. How you doing, Rick? Thanks so much for your time this morning, as always.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to talk to you. But it's crazy that we're talking about the start of an NBA season, because how we were just in the depth of about the middle of training camp.
Can you believe it? I mean, these seasons run so late now because every year the Warriors find themselves in the finals that, you know, everything goes away for a couple months. We go on vacations. We talk about football. And then, boom, just like that, we're now talking about the quest for a third consecutive title. What do you see as the greatest obstacle preventing this team from winning their third title in a row?
Health. I mean, you got to just stay healthy. You have to be fortunate enough to be healthy, especially come playoff time. And that's not anything that you can count on. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen. So you have to pray that everything is going your way and you can stay healthy. And I think that these guys know what it takes to be able to win. And, you know, in some ways, it's a nice thing to know that you have to be ready every time you step out there on the court, because when someone plays against you, they're the two-time defending champion, you know that their whole seasons for some of these teams, if they can beat you, it's a great accomplishment. And so if you're not ready, you can get embarrassed out there. And so it's a lot easier to get yourself up and ready, knowing full well that the other team, every time you step on that court, is going to come out there and try to play their best. So it forces you to have to be mentally prepared to go out and play.
Is the counter to that, though, the idea that 48 wins is going to get you into the postseason? So for Golden State, you don't have that same pressure to go out and win every night, because you know you can pretty much roll out of the rack and get 50 wins just on accident.
Well, see, you just used a word that I don't believe exists. I mean, pressure only exists when you don't have confidence in your ability. And, God, the Warriors should certainly have confidence in their ability to win basketball games. Just can't get overconfident. If they don't fall into the trap of trying to do too much individually, with the talent that they have, they're an extremely difficult team to beat. I always have said in the last several years since this team has emerged to be the premium team in the league, that they're their own worst enemy. The only time that they don't really play well is when they cause a problem for themselves. Too much of the one-on-one stuff. They go away from Warrior-style basketball, passing, moving, cutting, doing the things they can do so well. And that's the bottom line. If they just stick to what they know how to do, they're going to be very difficult to beat. There's no question about it. And then, you know, like heavens, I mean, if Cousins comes back and he's going to be anything at all close to what he was prior to his injury, then it becomes almost obscene how good this team could be.
Hey, Rick, when you talk about talent, you're saying how talented they are. Do you see some teams out there that has talent like the Warriors? Can you see a team, maybe they don't have as many starting talent, but maybe even a backup role, maybe their bench has more talent than the Dubs? If so, who's out there that you look as a threat?
Well, I mean, certainly the Rockets are a team that could have had a chance to do something last year. I mean,
sure,
just had a horrible playoff series. I mean, he went from like averaging 11 assists a game down to like 6 with 6 turnovers, and he was brutal. And they play terrible basketball, and yet they caused a problem for the Warriors. So certainly that's a team that can create a problem for them. But there's not that many teams out there that, you know, have the kind of talent and have the potential that the Warriors have. So, again, it's just a matter of these guys knowing that, hey, we got to be ready to go out there with the defending champions, take pride in that. I don't think that they're going to play excessive amount of minutes. I think they'll have a fairly easy time of being able to qualify for the playoffs and hopefully keep the home court advantage, because it is a great advantage for them. And we'll see how it works. But the health is the most important thing. It's all about health. If you're not healthy, then you're going to have a real difficult time being able to win and defend as a champion. But they've got a remarkable opportunity ahead of them. And if everything goes the way it should and everybody stays healthy, I don't see how anybody can beat them. I really don't.
Hall of Famer Rick Barry joining us here on 95.7 The Game. We haven't had the opportunity to speak to you since it happened. The addition of Boogie Cousins, how does that impact this roster? How are they all going to find a way to work together?
Well, the Warriors, in all the success that they've had here, really haven't had a super high-quality center. But you have a guy who's so versatile, who could do so many things. He can do low posts. He can shoot the ball. He can shoot the three. He can handle the ball. He can block shots. It just gives them a weapon that they've not had before. So it's something that they have to work into the system. But if they just play Warrior-style basketball, they can go inside out. They can bring another guy who can come out on the court. I mean, there's just so many things that they can do. The team, basically, without him, was almost basically indefensible with the three power guys that they had. It was KD and with Steph and Clay. Yeah, I mean, you have three guys who can shoot the three, who can drive to the basket, who can shoot the mid-range shot, who are great free-throw shooters. So, I mean, how do you beat a team like that? You have to pray the two of those three guys are having bad games to have a chance at all of beating them. If all three are on their game, your chances of beating them are almost nil. And so now you add a fourth guy to the equation, and then, of course, the wild card is always Draymond. I mean, he's capable of doing things, but I have to give Draymond a tremendous amount of credit. Because I said when KD came over, I said if Draymond would just forget about worrying about scoring and just play defense, rebound, and facilitate, he's going to make the team so much better, and that's what he's done. And now they have another guy who can get you 20, you know, I mean, 30. I mean, it's not 20, 25. He can get you, you know, 30 and 10 or 30, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, he just adds an element that makes them virtually indefensible from an individual standpoint and even perhaps from a team standpoint because you have so much firepower and who can hurt you in so many different ways. And now, again, that gives him the low post aspect of it as well, a guy that can kill him down in the post. And what happens? So you got to double him in some of these teams. If you double him, I mean, who do you double from? Probably from Draymond, I would guess, if the team is out there and he's out on the court. But the thing about Draymond, Draymond's capable of knocking down the three, but he's also capable of penetrating and kicking and pitching. It really creates so many problems defensively for other teams.
It'll be interesting to see how they employ the center position with Jones, Bell, and Looney versus having to use Draymond Green a lot as that stretch five player. Do you think that it's something to watch, Rick, early in the season, these younger centers, to see if they can, I guess, hold off the position and keep Draymond from having to play center until Cousins comes back?
Yeah, I would imagine that they're going to experiment with that and see how it works. But they do have, you know, they have some depth in that, and they can play around with it and see how it works. But they've had great success without having a center on the court as well, because it does create a tremendous amount of problems, like, again, for trying to defend the Warriors team because of the talent that they have. It's just, it's such an unenviable task to have to think about guarding this team, especially when they're playing the kind of basketball that they play where they can create so many opportunities with the passing, the cutting, and the moving. It's always been the big difference against the Cleveland series for those two couple of seasons when they played them. That was the defining moment was, I think, in game five after they almost swept them. In game five, they got two easy baskets on dunks when the game was relatively close when Cleveland jumped out, lost their lead, fell behind, and could have quit. They didn't. And it was both times LeBron was involved in it, and it, you know, and so I think it was JR was involved in another one. But the Warriors cut off, where you guy off of a screen, you know, cutting out of the low post, going out to the wing, and they didn't communicate. Both guys jumped out, they passed inside and got a dunk. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you play that type of basketball. When you have unselfish players who see the court, know how to play, is that it's not necessarily the play that you set up for the guy to get the shot. It's something else that that develops because of the fact that the other team had to make decisions. See, when you're passing and you're moving and you're cutting, you're forcing the defense to make decisions. And when you have great players and they're worried about them, if that team doesn't communicate perfectly, you have what happened in that situation. Two guys didn't communicate. They both jumped out on the shooter and they get a pass inside for a dunk. And Cleveland didn't get many of those types of baskets. And that's the thing that differentiates the Warriors from a lot of these teams.
Rick, what is some of the things that Steve Kerr has to be conscious of this year? How would you start the year? If you know you're reading a good book, you have the intro, the body, and the conclusion, how does he go through this process to keep these men on task?
I don't think he has to worry about that with these guys. These guys know what it takes to win. I mean, he's got guys that know the game, who are quality people. I don't think that's a major factor with him. And it's just a matter of the guys can't try to do any more than what they normally do when they've played the last few seasons together. Just play Warrior-style basketball. Don't worry about who's getting it done as long as it's getting done. And you, where you get into trouble is when you have someone who thinks they're going to try to do a little bit more than they've done in the past. Just play the way you've been playing. And the big thing is when Boogie comes back, and hopefully he's going to be really healthy, is that he is able to fit into that as well and just be happy to be a part of a team that can win and have a chance to be a champion.
NBA champion Rick Barry with us here on 95.7 The Game. Rick, as we get set to commence the final season at Oracle Arena, one thing we were going to do later today is talk about some of the great moments that took place for the Warriors at Oracle Arena. For you personally, what stands out? I know we're putting you on the spot a bit, but if you think back to all your time at Oracle, what stands out to you as some of the greatest moments?
Well, probably the worst, one of the worst games of my three quarters of my career, Game 7 against Chicago. Because if we don't win that game, we don't go to the finals and win the championship in 75. And I was so proud of my teammates to be able to bail me out because I sucked in that game. And Al took me out midway in the third quarter. And I'm sitting there and praying, come on, guys, please do it. And the guys played so incredibly well defensively. And George Johnson was blocking shots. And Clifford Ray was one of the biggest cheerleaders. And, I mean, everybody was doing what they needed to do. And we held Chicago scoreless for an incredibly long period of time. And they got us back in the game. And Al didn't even put me in at the start of the fourth quarter. I was kind of ready to go back in. But, you know, the team was playing so well that he let it keep going, which was very smart on his part. Then eventually when he put me in, fortunately, I played well. I think I got 5 for 7 or something like that. And we wound up winning that game. It was a remarkable comeback. So to me, that's a game that I'll never forget. And it was really one of the great comebacks and performances by a true, true team that played like a team. And again, we didn't care who got it done as long as it was getting done. And it wasn't me that got it done to help us get there until the last part of that fourth quarter. So that would be the memory for me as to what happened in the arena. Of course, it wasn't the same arena because then they went ahead redid it and got all of the suites and everything else in there, but it was still virtually the same building, so that would always be my fondest memory.
And the NBA was so big time that they got bumped by Ice Capades, right? And you had to end up winning the title over here in San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't even, nobody thought we were going to be a playoff team. And so it still turned out to be the biggest upset in the history of NBA finals. There's never been anything reasonably close to it. A team that was not even supposed to be a playoff team winds up getting to the finals. And then we sweep the team that's supposed to sweep up. It's supposed to be one of the biggest mismatches ever. No chance for us. And we swept that team. So that was a very special moment for us. Looking forward to October 24th when they're going to have a bit of a ceremony, and I think a lot of the guys are all going to be back there, and I'm looking forward to seeing this team play in person and having an opportunity to get together with all of my great teammates.
Good stuff. Hall of Famer, NBA champ, 8-time All-Star, the incomparable Rick Barry with us here on 95.7 The Game. Rick, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the game tonight, and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Hey, let me just real quickly tell people to see the gogyv.com/rbarry and check it out. And then I'm not even going to tell you, check it out and see, help make your life better. gogyv.com/rbarry.
Good tease, Rick. Good tease indeed.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care of yourself. Thank you so much. Love that dude because he's just real. That's the thing. Real will rub people the wrong way. A lot of people think he can be too real, but he tells you flat out, I sucked in that game. One of his greatest moments in that building, the first thing he can think of when we put him on the spot and ask that question, is a game in which he sucked. How many people would do that? A lot of people would default to a great memory that, this night I dropped 45, I wasn't feeling great, and I showed up. But what happened in the game? I think we won by 10.
That's Jerry.
It's like afterthought.
Look at you taking a shot at the GOAT.
No, I'm not.
That was low. That was Fortenball or Dan Dibley or correct. Anna or Nice Guy or Producer Cody. Strictly low, Jerry. We love you.
Who doesn't love Jerry? I love Jerry. He's a great guy. He's the GOAT, right?
Yeah. I've long maintained that.
Yeah, right.
You're saying
you're the one that's backpedaling? No, looks like bail technique right now, doesn't it?
No.
Yeah, you're running down the sideline. We see the back of your number right now. So basically what you're saying is that Jerry. Wait, what flag?
He's talking about during the interview.
Oh.
Yeah, just get my flag ready. That's all.
It's always ready. I mean, is there a flag?
Blow
on
the
play?
Whistle.
I don't know. If you're going to bring it up, why don't you execute the flag?
Yes. Well, there was a time in there that I know that, we usually talk with Mike. That's what we get paid to do is talk while the microphone's on. That's literally the only job we have is to talk when the mic's on. So blow the flag. Joe didn't talk when the mic's on.
Blow the flag. blow it.
Yeah, blow the whistle.
Blow the flag if you can, please.
Blow the whistle.
For the five-yard penalty that Lowe wants to hand out to me.
But I didn't think that there was a flag in real time because I don't know if he spoke when the mic was off. Do we have the audio to see if we can determine whether or not there was actually a flag here? Because normally I am the one who mans the penalty flags, and if there is a flag, I normally will throw it, but I wasn't sure in this case.
We're under review.
If everything goes the way it should and everybody stays healthy, I don't see how anybody can beat them. I really don't.
Hall of Famer Rick Barry joining.
No flag.
Well, hold on. Even if I had spoke with the microphone off, how would you have heard it there?
You can hear it because the other two mics are on. Yes. You would have heard it.
That's so unfortunate for you, Lowe.
You would have heard
it. How about a flag for false allegations?
Hold on.
Oh, my God. No one but Dan.
Could it have been delay of game, though, by any chance? You know, just because it took him a second? I mean, that happens with all of us, right? But
yeah, I didn't think
I don't know. Build your case. Y'all are trying to throw a flag, but you're coming really weak right now.
Yeah, we're coming weak. Yeah.
I just sat back and let everyone have their opportunity. You look excited to say something. Go ahead.
Hang on. I got the sound of it. Let me play it. You hear that?
Yeah, it's the sound of him turning his mic on.
Yeah, exactly. There was no sound there at all.
Man, so what does that mean? That means no flag?
That means y'all have access to the button if you want to start throwing flags.
Maybe I should listen to mine. Then. Do you actually? Maybe I should go back.
We're all out of time for this segment right now. Warriors tickets coming up in 13 minutes. Hang tight. Brush up on your Warrior playoff trivia. 13 minutes from now, we're going to have a question for you. You knock it out of the park and be the first one to do so. You will win two tickets to tonight's game. At 8:45 this morning, coming off the Greg Popp interview, we're going to run down 10 or 11 dynasty takes that we're going to make going into the season. We've got 10 or 11 questions for the season. We're going to lay out the next few months for you, everything you need to know. We're just going to give it away. We're just going to give it away for free because that's what we do here. But focal point of this conversation, Monday Night Football, Lambeau Field, Packers 33, Niners 30. Watchability. Bottom line, when you get to a point where you know the season is lost, you just want to turn on something entertaining. And I think a lot of us went into last night's game thinking this is Monday Night Football. The last thing we want to see is the Niners get embarrassed on national television and then start the whole narrative. Well, maybe Shanahan's not the guy. Maybe Lynch is in over his head. This team is busted. And you just sit there and then you have to come in. And there's honestly nothing more depressing in this line of work, which is a great line of work, than to have to come in and perform the autopsy on yet another lost game, yet another lost season. Last night, sure, didn't work out for the Niners in the end. 63 points, on the board in that game. The Niners were -3 in turnover differential. They went into that game as double-digit road underdogs. They started a backup quarterback. They were outgained by 120 total yards. And they were tied on Monday Night Football with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time on his home turf with 3 seconds left in that game. I enjoyed that game. Bottom line, we can sit here and do the takes and the analysis, and we can pick through the loss. But that was an enjoyable football game.
Very enjoyable. And you talked about watchability, and that had to be a 9.5 or a 9.6 on a scale of 1 to 10. It was thrilling from start to finish. They went out there and did what I had hoped they would do. Stay on the script, march down, you get a touchdown. And the Packers answered. Niners make a mistake on the ensuing kickoff and muff it. Green Bay scores, and you're thinking, okay, here we go. It's going to be another one of these turnover-filled choke jobs where the 49ers just aren't in it, and Green Bay runs away with it. But the 49ers offense hung in there. They were able to move the ball on the ground. Raheem Mostert with his best game as a pro. Matt Breida playing on the bum ankle was able to do damage. And Marquise Goodwin, what can you say about the playmaking he did? That's what we've been waiting for from this vertical offense. Goodwin was healthy. He was able to get behind the defense. Big touchdown. And then, Lowe, you mentioned earlier the great route he ran on that second touchdown. The offense looked good. The defense was shaky, but you thought they were going to make enough plays to somehow get it done. But ultimately, at the end, they just didn't make enough plays to get the victory.
I think that you take away from that game is Green Bay didn't win it. The Niners lost it. If you look at Cal, you know, you look at a guy who we love, and I talk about him all the time because I just think that he's the heartbeat of that team. Cal Juszczyk, that interception, that fumble rather, catch and then fumble, end up putting points on the boards for Green Bay. You know, the muff fumble gave them a touchdown. So, yeah, we can talk about Aaron Rodgers' great comeback in the end of that, how he executed, but you're not in that situation if you don't turn on the ball. We talked about it yesterday when you don't have the cupboards are kind of bare and you're playing football, you can't afford to lose those battles. And that's how it came down. So yeah, that was an unbelievable comeback by Aaron Rodgers. Unbelievable. That's who he is. But you're up. That game's not that close if you don't give up those points by your turnovers. So this team, especially when you're not a great team, you got to minimize the amount of turnovers. You got to play better football. Yes, they played well. They ran the ball. They did some great things, and it was good. But I know as players, man, you didn't get embarrassed, but those kind of ones hurt. Those hurt so bad. You know it hurts when you see Richard Sherman usually plays on the wide out, plays on the island. He goes in and guards a slot guy, moves inside to do something that he's not good at, and that's why he plays usually outside on the Z or on the X. He goes inside because he's trying to make a play. He's trying to say, look, they've been going to this guy too much. Let me get on him. So he goes in there and covers just to match up. Ended up getting a hole in the play, but this
flag
is a guy.
Was ticky-tack.
It was ticky-tack.
The Richard Sherman flag's ticky-tack. Let's go. If it's going to be Aaron Rodgers and he's going to be one of the greatest of all time, you don't need to do him any favors. It's 3rd and 16. It was done.
It was done.
It was done. You don't need to do this guy any favors.
I totally agree, but that just goes to show you.
You make a good point.
No, you're right.
Venting.
He was not afraid of that moment. That's what you brought him in there, and here's a guy that jumped in a position that he doesn't do, and just to say, I don't know, care, put it on me. And that's the kind of guy you want on your team. So I thought this team played well. I don't think that this Green Bay team went and won it. I think that still mistakes is still costing this team. This team finds a way to compete, and you got to give kudos to the head coach, what Kyle Shanahan's been able to do, the way these men have been competing week in and week out with the consistency. The one thing they got to continue to grow and continue to clean up is the self-inflicted wounds, the turnovers, penalties. They have to clean that up. If they can do that, this team can play and compete. Even now.
They're minus 11 right now, last in the league.
They might be the sloppiest team in football.
They are.
Again, no takeaways last night. They don't have, and this is the toughest thing to have to deal with today, they don't have a single defensive playmaker. They need a playmaker. Troy Polamalu, Ed Reed, Khalil Mack, Derek Brooks, Brian Urlacher, Reggie White. Just go through history. You need a defensive playmaker. They don't have a single guy on defense capable of altering the game. They don't have that. They have 11 bodies, and they shuffle them in and out, and they get hurt, and some make plays and some don't. Some overachieve, some underachieve. They don't have one singular defensive playmaker on this team. That's the big problem. Back in Harbaugh's days when this defense was killing it under Fangio, you had playmakers everywhere. Alden was a playmaker. Justin Smith was a playmaker. Bowman, Willis, yep. They were everywhere. Yep. You had playmakers everywhere. Now, that's the hallmark of a great defense. No one's asking for a great defense right now, all right? No one's even asking for a competent defense because this defense is terrible. And all of that will have to be sorted out somewhere down the road. But they do not have a playmaker. When was the last time they got a strip sack? When was the last time they had a pick six? Granted, Exum got Phillip Rivers, okay? That's more outlier than anything else. Did Exum even play last night? Did anyone even see him anywhere last night? That's the point. They don't have any playmakers on this team. Reuben Foster, when's the last time he wrecked somebody? That dude is on this team to wreck shop. DeForest Buckner is here to wreck shop. Somebody at some point has to alter the game. I remember growing up watching Brian Dawkins in Philadelphia. Dawkins had a knack late in games. Late in games, when it was tight and you needed someone to make a play, Dawkins always seemed to figure it out. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. Dawkins was the guy that in the NFC Championship game against Atlanta laid out Algie Crumpler as Vic and the Falcons were coming down the field and altered that game. That play altered that game. It is a legendary play. They showed it the Hall of Fame because that was the staple signature play of his career, right? The Niners have none of that. The Niners have got to find a way to acquire, draft, develop, what have you, a defensive playmaker. There needs to be a guy. Whose jersey are you buying right now? If you have a kid and you want him to buy, or you're going to buy him a defensive jersey on this team, who's it going to be?
Probably DeForest Buckner, quite frankly.
He's the oldest guy on the team, Richard Sherman.
I was thinking Reuben Foster, but again, what you're saying, Joe, he's a nice linebacker. He's a solid player, but he's not a playmaker. You think about linebacking playmakers like Von Miller, Khalil Mack, etc. Those guys are playmakers. Even Navarro Bowman and then Patrick Willis, those guys who would jar the football loose. Right now you have one interception as a defense, and you've taken away two fumbles. You are last in the National Football League on turnovers taken, and you are most or first in the NFL on turnovers given away. So it's one thing if you're Cleveland. Cleveland has the most takeaways in football. They've also given it away a bunch, but they're in the positive. You can't be dead last in both of those categories.
These guys need a defensive playmaker. Bottom line, that's what we learned last night. You give up over 500 yards, Aaron Rodgers, fine. You don't force a single turnover, fine. You got three sacks, and Buckner's a nice player. He's not wrecking shop, though. The reason we hype him up as much as we do is context. There's no one else to hype up. That's why we hype up DeForest Buckner. That's why we talk about what a future he has, because there's no one else defensively to talk about. Foster looks like he's got it, but if you want to be compared to some of the all-time greats at that position, this is the next in the line of Willis and Bowman and Singletary and all these great linebackers throughout history that have either come through this organization or not, you need to change the game at some point. Foster needs to make a play. When's the last time he came off the edge, strip-sacked the quarterback, recovered the ball, and rumbled 25 yards before someone brought him down to where everyone came in the next day going, my God, did you see the play Reuben Foster made? Reuben Foster hasn't had a single play like that all year. Not one. Not blaming him. He's had some nice plays, but he hasn't had a single play all year that we've come in to talk about. Have we talked about a single defensive play all year besides Exum's pick six? That was a nice play against the Chargers, but you need more. You need a guy who can alter the game on that side of the ball.
I think when you look at offense and defense and players, there's one play that happens on a special team that, you know, when we had the human joystick, if you know Kansas City, when all the returns that he had.
Dante Hall.
There's a play that, boom, alter. Now they say, God, that guy's arrived. You see a linebacker, it's a Ray Lewis, a Brian Arlacher, a P. Willie, a big play. Navarro Bowman, the pick six to Dibbs leave when, you know, he walks out of the stadium and he misses the big play.
I heard it.
Those are
you felt it. Those are those plays.
You heard it.
We got to the bottom of that as long as you could feel it.
Thank you, Coach.
Those are those plays, those statement plays you say, there's a star. The star has been born. We're still waiting. These guys are young. I really believe that Buckner will have that play where he takes a guy out or a big, you know, sack and a strip fumble that you say, that's what I've been waiting for. I think Reuben Foster has that ability that he gets a pick because he's running out in the flat. And he's going to pick one. He's going to take it to a house. This guy has that ability because he's fast enough. He can run. He can do things. You've seen hell. Yeah, it shouldn't have been, but he's seen cover receivers at times because he can run. So people know his athletic ability. So we're waiting for those guys to have that altering play that just say, that's that guy that I wanted to see on my team. These guys are in their first and second year and third year. Give these guys a little bit of time. I really believe that the statement that you were looking for will happen by these two guys.
Well, it's got to happen soon, and it's got to be coached up, Lo, because I just did a quick rudimentary calculation on fumbles so far in the National Football League through 6 weeks, and there have been over 100 balls fumbled and recovered by the opposing team, and the 49ers have two of those. And you can't be in a situation where you're not intercepting the ball, you have one pick. By the way, I called it in my scorching hot
you
takes
did.
That Friday. Which
you
is,
did. You nailed that.
It's even crazier when you think about it because it might be their only interception of the year.
Essentially
right?
Calling the lottery at this point.
But at this point, sadly, and shout out, I think it's Mega Millions tonight, $600 million or something. It's crazy.
Really?
I think it's Mega Millions, right?
Do you like the Warriors to cover the 12?
I do, actually, yeah. I think it's going to be an absolute laugh riot tonight, but I digest.
Just a barrel of laughs over at
Oracle
tonight.
Oh, it's going to be a 30-point laugher. But,
giving away tickets in a couple of minutes. Hang tight.
Don't miss me at the Stadium Pub in Walnut Creek, 6 to 8. But you have to be able to force fumbles, Coach. And I don't know if that's something that you teach, if it's something that's not being taught. But over 105 fumbles this year in the NFL, and you've only recovered two of them. That's unacceptable.
No, it's built in. Charles Tillman, no one needed to teach Charles Tillman how to make plays. Peanut just went out and routinely made plays. He punched the football out. It's instinct. It's part of you. All right? You're right. A lot of young guys on this defense, they need a playmaker. Dante Whitner, all right? The hit on Pierre Thomas. You will remember that hit for the rest of your life as a Niner fan, whether you were watching it or not, whether you came back and saw the highlight, he changed that game. He came on this air and talked about how plays like that can change games. He ruined Pierre Thomas on that play. You see that stuff time and time again, setting the tone in these football games. The Legion of Boom, as sore a subject as that can be for Niner fans, was so good at that. Between Averill and Bennett and Red Bryant and Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas and everyone else that played the other corner position. They came out and got a safety against Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl to start the game. They wrecked shop to start that game, and that was it. The Broncos were done one play into that Super Bowl. That was a straight-up ass-kicking, courtesy of a group of defensive playmakers who routinely found ways to alter games. Troy Polamalu, there was this play I remember Polamalu made, and it's the least important of his career. I was in Pittsburgh. It was the first game I had ever covered in my entire life. I think this is, I want to say it's 08. And the Steelers are hosting the New York Giants. It's a Sunday afternoon game. And Polamalu is like in his prime. The Steelers end up losing this game, believe it or not. James Harrison had to fill in at long snapper, and they were pinned against their goal line, and he snapped one over the punter's head. It cost him this whole thing, yada, yada, yada. But in that game, Polamalu, as a free safety, pre-snap would come all the way up to the line of scrimmage, right? It would show you that it was man coverage and that he was blitzing. And right before the snap, Polamalu was athletic and fast enough that he turned and sprinted to dead center field. And suddenly it turns into cover three. And the play led to a turnover. I don't know if Eli threw a pick or there was a fumble, but I remember there being confusion. And the only reason it stands out is because I was choosing that specific play just to watch Troy Polamalu. And I watched him come all the way to the line of scrimmage. Looked like he was blitzing, looked like it was man, and before the snap, he could get all the way back to center field and still make a play.
He was amazing.
He was. And I'm not asking the Niners to acquire Troy Polamalu because those guys are not a dime a dozen. But this defense needs a game changer. It needs the guy that people can rally around. It needs the guy that can take the game into his own hands. Khalil Mack has been doing that for the Bears all season. He has just been altering games. You're right when you bring up the Ravens. Ray Lewis, that Super Bowl against the Giants, Ray Lewis was everywhere in that game. He had everything. Sacks, double-digit tackles, tip passes, pressures, interceptions, fumbles. I've never seen a linebacker play a football game like that. He destroyed the New York Giants in that game. Even those Charger teams you played on, Merriman at his heyday could wreck games. Jason Taylor could wreck games. How many game changers defensively do you think are in the league right now? Just off the top of your head as you work your way around the teams. It's not as if there's like four. There's a good handful of guys, pass rushers and beyond, that can alter games, that can change the way, the outcome of the game. And the Niners just don't have that. They have got to get some guy defensively that can wreck shop.
And you're right. And that's why when you talk, well, that's why I'm saying give these guys a little time and you look at certain teams that they had. When you look at these superstars, when they had Troy playing at a high level, he also had a guy named Joy Porter, who was a pretty good linebacker, who was mean. You think about a lot of guys that these teams had. You know, they had Casey Hampton in the middle, another nose. When Sean Merriman was wrecking shop, we had a big Jamal in the middle that would take two guys that would make him free him up for one-on-ones. When you think about teams, usually you have some veteran guys as well. When you look at the 49ers roster and you look at their defense, you look at these age 22, 23, 25, you go down and look at a lot of the players that you're asking to make plays, which they can and they will. I think right now you see guys, a lot of these guys are just young and they're looking for someone to show them how to do it. You don't have, you know, necessarily those guys when Javon Kearse was tearing it up, had Kenny Holmes that was already in the league that was able there to push him. When the San Francisco 49ers had Aldon Smith, you had Justin Smith. Cowboy was the one that was pushing him, getting him dialed up, helping him out, showing him the ropes, what making him great. Take him away, you see how he didn't necessarily play as well. So when teams do those things and things start to happen, you saw Chicago Bears defense was great, and all of a sudden you bring in a Khalil Mack, took those there everyone's level to a next level. You're right, you need players to step up and make plays, especially defensively, to make that statement where you're like, wow, that guy there is popping off the screen. That usually will happen, and I think it takes time where you see it start happen on a regular basis, but it's going to take veteran guys, also guys that are there to show these young guys how to eat, show these young guys how to work, show these guys how to be great. So I think that that's still coming for this young
San Francisco 49ers. You mentioned Aldon Smith because I was just thinking about that when Joe was talking about a game changer. Imagine if he was still on this team and still playing as well as he was early in his career and none of the off-the-field stuff ever happened. He would be just that leader. He would still be wrecking shop. He'd still be making plays, and he would be a guy to show Thomas, Armstead, Buckner, Blair, all these guys what it's like to be a pass rusher in the National Football League. But because his whole career imploded and they've blown draft picks, as a result, you don't have that veteran leadership for this young defense.
All right, let's give away some Warriors tickets. We have a pair of tickets to Warriors Thunder. Tonight, the season opener at Oracle. What we are going to do is ask you a trivia question. The first person to answer it correctly wins the tickets. The number is 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Here's your question. Over the last 4 years, how many different teams have the Warriors faced in the playoffs? 888-957-9570. Since the title run began, the last 4 years, how many different teams have the Warriors faced in the playoffs? Now, to win a title or to get to the finals like the Warriors have had each of the last 4 years, I guess you could probably have a maximum of 16 teams. However, you do know that the Warriors have not faced different teams every year. There have been some repeats. Mm. So how many total franchises have they faced in the playoffs over the last 4 years? 888-957-9570. Tim Hardaway set to join us in about 9 minutes. We've got Greg Papa at 8:30. Is Eric and Vallejo still on the line? Let's put him through. You want to talk about the Niners? You can hit us up as well. Eric and Vallejo, welcome to the show. The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Morning. Lowe, Joe, Div, Anna, how you doing? I just wanted to bring up, okay, you know, everything, you know, Niners played great. You know, kudos to them, so on and so on. But the question that I have, the one question I have about it is that after the players play great, when it comes down to crunch time, the game management, I remember a few weeks ago when you guys were bringing up how teams should employ a game manager, you know, for the end of game. And, you know, one thing that stood out to me last night, and then it took me back to that Super Bowl where Atlanta just completely blew up, you know, to the Patriots. And, you know, what was it? It was like one minute and 5 seconds left, second and three, second down, 3 yards to go. Why would you not run the ball, right? You know, we've been running the ball on the Packers all night long. And, you know, why would you risk giving a guy like Aaron Rodgers the ball back? You know what I mean? And you know, the ball was tipped, you know, batted down. Then they got to third, and then that's when Bethard, you know, had, you know, wanted to go for the gusto versus, you know, trying to get the first down. And, you know, that happened. But the question that I have, because then the stats started coming up how the 49ers are, like, you know, 3-7 in you know, close games, you know, over this time. And now I don't remember every detail from every one of those games, but it just made me wonder because, yeah, players play, you know, players are the ones who are going to ultimately go out there and win the games. But when it comes down to crunch time, when it comes down to, you know, under 2 minutes and someone needs to manage the game, to me, that's where head coaches earn their money, you know. And so, you know, after we get these, you know, these playmakers on defense and you know, we get these, you know, other offensive players and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I mean, I guess I'm hoping that Kyle's going to be the guy that when it gets to those close games, the end of games, that we can close it out. We can close it out. I mean, you know, we have to make sense of it sometimes, you know? I mean, I thought it was basic football. I mean, I never played in the NFL, so I'm not going to, you know, try to act like that.
All right, Eric, thank you. We appreciate the phone call. I think the point you're getting at is the decision-making on behalf of the head coach late in the game, final possession. Let's take you through it. A minute 55 to go. Mason Crosby kicks off. Game tied 30-30. Like I said, we're inside the two-minute warning at 1:55. Richie James runs the ball back to the San Francisco 32. There's a penalty on Green Bay for unnecessary roughness. The Niners start at their own 47. This is a very favorable situation to be in. First and 10, Bethard to George Kittle for 7 yards. So now it's second and 3, and you've got about a minute 30, minute 20 to go in this game, and you have all three timeouts, and you're in Packer territory with one of the better kickers in the NFL, Robbie Gould, who, by the way, used to kick for the Bears and knows Lambeau Field very, very well. This is the point of contention. On second and 3, you had been running well most of the night. Shanahan opts for a pass. Bethard goes for Pierre Garçon. Ball gets tipped, incomplete. Clock stops. Minute 16 remaining. Then third and 3, Bethard again drops back to throw. He's pressured. He chucks one deep. It's a bit underthrown. Goodwin can't make a play on it. Kevin King, Bay Area product, Bishop O'Dowd, played at Washington, makes the interception. So now Green Bay, with no timeouts, somehow finds itself Aaron Rodgers with the football. He's got a long way to go, but he's got over a minute remaining. And the argument, if I'm hearing it correctly, and I saw it last night on Twitter and everywhere else, whether or not Kyle should have run the ball in that situation. Now, You've played a lot of football, and we talked about this morning, the way this game unfolded late for the 49ers. Do you agree with the head coach's decision-making?
I understand what he was thinking, Joe. And we talked about how they were running the ball earlier, yes, but two series prior to the, before Aaron Rodgers tied it up, they had a hell of a goal line stance on Green Bay, and they got the ball. They ran it twice. They threw it on third down, and it was three and out. The next series, they came out, they passed again, passed it, and it was, I thought, fourth and one, fourth and two. In my opinion, that was the one, to me, I would have went for. I questioned that one. In my opinion, that was a bigger stance, in my opinion, because of the fact you were still up by seven. You were 5 minutes left in the game, under a little bit under 5 minutes left in the game. If you go get that conversion right now, now they don't have any more timeouts. You burn them up. Now you're running the ball and you controlling the clock. Now you would have punted it deeper. Instead, you punted it right then. And then what happened? Green Bay took the ball. They end up scoring. And then we get to this last series that you're alluding to. And that's when you had great field position. There was nothing wrong with the first one because it got 7 yards, threw the ball to Kittle. Now it's second and three. In my opinion, they already, Green Bay had no timeouts. And that, in my opinion, that's when you run it. Because even though you didn't have success on those two previous things, that's when Kyle Shanahan, he's a creature of habit. He said, oh my God, we got stopped. We've been getting, you know, just getting to the line of scrimmage. I would even tossed it out on the perimeter because you was having success with the quick pitch, getting it out on his out on the perimeter. In the middle it was a little harder to get. It's a little tough for sledding. I would have pitched the ball and got to the perimeter, hopefully picked up 1 yard or 2 yards. Now would have been in a situation where you're third and one. So you're third and one. I can play action. I can quarterback sneak. I can throw the ball. They were squatting on third and three. You play at the sticks. It now, boom, you know it's, he can't just pick the ball up and throw it because of the fact you still got to get 1, 2, 3, 4 and get a 4 to 5 yards because you got to get beyond the sticks by one. So you have to hold onto the ball more and linemen can get up, deflect passes. So in my opinion, I thought on that second, especially on that second down, I would have liked to see them run the ball because the clock would have kept going like you alluded to. You don't give Aaron Rodgers that type of time. But I understand his thought process because he just got stopped on the two previous possessions.
So in summary, you don't mind what happened late, but earlier you would have liked to have seen Kyle get a little bit more aggressive. Maybe yes. Go for it on fourth down, even though you're backed up.
Yes.
Fourth and one, go ahead, try to win the game there.
He's talking about fourth and one at their own 13, and there's still 5:45 to go.
And you're still winning that game.
That's balls right there.
That's gigantic beach balls is what that is.
That's Randy Marsh in that one episode of South Park.
Pretty.
Yeah,
you brought me back there. Brought me back to the late 90s
with
that reference. Yeah.
Weed everywhere.
I think the wheel. You would probably need a Brinks truck for the size of those rocks because if you don't get it, and it's fourth and one of the 13, you don't get it. Now you're giving Aaron Rodgers a layup. And
they had the layup.
I do want to just correct one thing because the Niners choose to punt in that situation, and then the Packers do punt it back. They don't score on the next drive. The Niners had another possession in which they got. Three and out again. They punted back to Green Bay, and then Green Bay scored the touchdown subsequent that tied the game. So I think fourth and one on your own 13 to go for it in that case is way, way too risky. And for me, second down and three, I have no problem with them passing the ball. It was a safe pass, and the left tackle, Joe Staley, didn't get his guy down on the ground, and so the pass was deflected. It was designed to just be a quick hitter to Garcon, see what he can get over on the left side. You wouldn't figure it would be incomplete in that situation.
But yeah, you would because of the fact, if you look earlier that night, Perry's been blocked. He already had any batted passes this guy had. He had 3 or 4 batted passes earlier that night because they were just going to that side. And so they were saying, look, these guys aren't getting us down. So 1, 2, 3, get your hands up. If you're going to do those things, then either coaching's got to say, look, you fire out block and get those guys down on the ground. But then because he was holding the ball, because they had to get to the sticks, it wasn't fourth and inches or second and one or second in short. You have guys now, they're running and then they're getting their hands up because he's holding onto the ball too long in that situation. So now if a guy can 1, 2, 3 and push and you watch, the guy had, I think, 3 batted balls to that side because they knew where they were going. They were telling those guys, get your hands up. Perry, I think he had three batted down balls. So in certain situations, I think that you run the ball in certain situations, but it's game flow, it's game feel. But this is another time in the Super Bowl, and you look at it with Kyle Shanahan, at times he'll go for the juggler and try to be aggressive at times, and sometimes it's caught him. And, you know, Do you blame him? No, he's the offensive coordinator. He feels that way. But at times, I think it's better to be conservative at times.
I'll take aggression any day over the week over playing not to lose. The Bears played not to lose against Miami over the weekend. They played for the 54-yard field goal because Matt Nagy, the head coach, does not trust Mitchell Trubisky. He did not want him throwing the ball because Trubisky had thrown a pick in the end zone earlier that put him in that position. They miss. Caleb Sturgis misses the 53-yard field goal. Miami goes down, wins the game. It's over. Too soft. Same thing in week one against the Packers. Nagy didn't learn. Now, Shanahan was maybe a bit too aggressive in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Maybe too aggressive here, but you know what? If you're going to make mistakes, if you perceive this to have been a mistake, fine. At least it's happening now when you're not going to the playoffs anyway. So learn from this and then come back stronger somewhere down the road. Because last night, I'd rather you make mistakes and learn from them in these games than when you're finally good enough to get to the playoffs. You start mismanaging games in those situations. But I'll take aggression every day of the week, whether it's right or wrong. I love the aggression. They went for the kill shot against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. So be it. So be it. All right. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1, a radio.com station. Good morning. Welcome to the 8 o'clock hour. Greg Papa is going to join us at 8:30, but right now, five-time NBA All-Star, former Golden State Warriors point guard, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Hardaway, joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.